Good morning. We have one more oral item on our calendar today. That is case A20-0821, Scott A. Lasek versus Evolutionary Systems Corp. This matter is being heard by Zoom on the Zoom platform today. The same procedural rules apply to Zoom oral arguments as apply to our in-person oral arguments. Each party will have 15 minutes for your primary argument, and appellant will have an additional 5 minutes for rebuttal. The Court of Appeals is recording this argument today. No other recordings are permitted except with the express prior permission of the Court of Appeals. Counsel should be able to see the clock showing the amount of time you have left in your argument in one of the screens in the grid view. If there are any technological issues, the marshal will stop the clock and restart it once the issue is resolved. The only other thing I'll mention today is I'll ask that you, before we get started, is that when each counsel starts your argument, that you identify yourself and the party you represent. So with that, counsel for appellant, you can proceed when you're ready.
Thank you, Your Honor, and may it please the court. My name is Evan Weiner, and I represent the appellant, Scott Lasek, in this matter. This is a very simple appeal. Minnesota Statute 181.13 requires an employer to pay an involuntarily terminated employee all compensation earned within 24 hours of the employee's written demand. The legislature has made a policy judgment that when an employer fires an employee in the state of Minnesota, that they must pay within 24 hours everything that that employee has earned up through the date of termination. That clearly did not happen here. Yeah, Evosys's own records show that it did not happen. If you even just look at the declaration of Evosys's own head of human resources, Deep D'Aurora, which is index number 103 in the record, and specifically exhibit 5 to that declaration, those are pay stubs showing post-termination payments to Mr. Lasek, showing what Evosys paid Mr. Lasek after he was terminated and when they paid it. Evosys tries to pretend that this evidence doesn't exist, essentially, because based on this evidence alone, the court's summary judgment was error and must be reversed. Mr. Lasek was terminated on August 7th of 2018. On August 9th of 2018, he made a written demand in the form of an email for all compensation that he had earned. Therefore, under the plain language of Minnesota Statute 181.13, he was entitled to payment of everything that he had earned by August 10th of 2018. Evosys did not pay him anything by that deadline, not a penny within the 24-hour deadline. The first payment that Evosys made to him after his termination was not until August 15th, 2018, 5 days after the deadline. And that was not full payment either. Evosys continued to make incremental payments over the course of almost 6 months, including payments that some of the payments were not made until after Mr. Lasek filed his conciliation court complaint on October 1st of 2018. So it really is that simple. He was not paid within 24 hours of his demand as required by the statute. Therefore, Evosys is liable for a penalty pursuant to the statute, and the district court erred by granting summary judgment and dismissing that claim for a penalty. Evosys cannot seriously contend that it owed him nothing, that he had not earned any compensation at the time of his termination. Obviously, he was owed accrued salary up through his date of termination, accrued vacation time up through his date of termination, severance in lieu of notice of termination. Per the employment contract, he was entitled to 2 weeks' pay because he was terminated without notice, expense reimbursement for expenses he had incurred during his employment, and at least some commissions for revenue that Evosys had collected during his employment. Evos acknowledged in an email that it owed him compensation and that it would pay him compensation that it owed. And the issue isn't whether they eventually paid him. It's whether they paid him within 24 hours. And here it's clear that they did not. And our contention is he still has not been paid on everything that he is owed. There's Actuant Phase 2 and Data Veil, which he was not paid on. And there's fact issues as to whether he was the procuring cause of those sales. Minnesota follows the procuring cause rule for commissioned salespeople. And there was conflicting deposition testimony between Mr. Lasek and his supervisor, Mr. King, as to who was the procuring cause of those sales. So the district court erred by resolving that disputed fact issue on summary judgment. And there are still fact issues as to whether there are still to this day additional commissions that Mr. Lasek has not been paid.
Mr. Weiner, with regard to the salary issue as opposed to the commission, is it your contention he hasn't been paid his full salary at this point?
No, eventually he was. At the time that he filed his conciliation court complaint, I believe he had not, because there was another payment on October 31st, which was later on that month. So I believe he was still owed salary and vacation and some other items at the time he filed his conciliation court claim. I believe the last payment that Evosys made to him was not until January of 2019. So continuing incremental payments continued to come in. And at the time of the summary judgment, yes, he had been paid for his salary. He had been paid for vacation, but he had not been paid for the penalty under 181.13. And I think that's part of
And that's why you're arguing the claim survives with regard to the salary is because the penalty wasn't paid.
Correct. Yes. Any of those items that were not paid within 24 hours would be sufficient for the penalty. So even if it was just the salary not getting paid within 24 hours, that would suffice. Even if it was just the vacation, just the severance, just the expense reimbursement, just commission, any one of those would suffice for the penalty. And here they didn't pay him anything within 24 hours, nothing. So in order to avoid that penalty, they would have to have not earned any compensation at the time he was terminated. And that cannot seriously be contended. Evosys doesn't contend that. The district court didn't find that. There would be no support for that. Really, what happened at the district court level, and this is part of what Evosys is doing at this court here, is they make this sort of straw man argument based on a few quotes in Mr. Lasek's deposition testimony. And they try to argue that his entire 181 claim is based on some type of a theory that Evosys had to pay him commissions on revenue that Evosys had not been paid for. If you look at Mr. Lasek's argument, his brief in opposition to summary judgment, which is index 120, that's not the argument he made to the district court at all. His argument to the district court was on 181 was always they did not pay him timely within the time period required by the statute. That was his position from the beginning, even in conciliation court. It was his position that he actually argued in his brief in opposition to summary judgment, but both at the district court level and on appeal. What Evosys does is they take a few quotes from his deposition where he indicated that one possible legal theory might be that Evosys had to pay him before Evosys was paid on certain commissions. That's not the argument he actually made in opposition to summary judgment. It's not the argument we're making on appeal here. That's a straw man and it's a distraction. And the district court, I think, looking at the summary judgment order, got confused by that argument because when it came to evaluating 181, that's the only thing that the district court addressed was that Evosys' straw man argument and not the argument that Mr. Lasek had actually been making from the very beginning. So the record's very clear on the 181.13 for reversal here. It's clear cut. It's in Evosys' own documentation. They did not pay him within 24 hours. The statute requires it. He's entitled to the penalty. That alone requires reversal. There's also fact issues on the commissions that he's owed still on Actuant and Data Veil. What Evosys and the district court did was basically take Mr. King's deposition testimony as though it was established fact when Mr. Lasek testified to the contrary. And who is the procuring cause of these accounts is a fact issue that should have been resolved at trial. The final issue is this issue of age discrimination. motion to amend the complaint to add age discrimination. Mr. Lasik was 55 years old at the time of his termination. He testified he was the best sales rep, the best US sales rep in Evosys's history. So the only element that was missing from a prima facie age discrimination case in order to shift the burden to Evosys to explain why they terminated him, the only remaining element was the age of his replacement. He sought that in discovery. He was denied it. He brought a motion to amend to add the claim and to compel discovery on that. The district court denied the amendment, calling it a fishing expedition. Amendments are liberally granted absent prejudice. The information about the age of his replacement would be easily available from Evosys through discovery. And I suspect if he'd been replaced by someone who was his own age or older, Evosys would have simply produced that information and then said the amendment was futile because the replacement was not a younger person. That's not what happened. The district court should have allowed the amendment because Evosys cannot show any prejudice other than having to defend against the additional claim. Evosys argues that there was no evidence in the record of Lasik's age. That's not true. It's in his deposition transcripts. They argue that they, for the first time on appeal, that they don't have sufficient employees to be subject to the Minnesota Human Rights Act. Two problems with that. One, the Human Rights Act doesn't require a certain number of employees, unlike the federal statute, which does. And secondly, there's nothing in the record about the number of employees Evosys has. So again, Evosys makes a lot of kind of desperate arguments here. And I think that the fact that they're making arguments, like for example, that the denial of the breach of contract claim, the amendment to add breach of contract as being redundant of the claims from the beginning of the lawsuit, that somehow bars him from pursuing the commission claims. I mean, it's a nonsensical argument. And the fact that they're making so many wild and desperate arguments, I think is a clear indication of how desperate Evosys is to try to save this erroneous district court summary judgment grant. They argue that because under the employment contract, they can wait till the next pay period after they fire him before paying him, that somehow gets them out of 181.13. Well, that would render 181.13 and the timing requirements therein meaningless. And also that's contrary to the Supreme Court's decision in Hruska versus Chandler Associates, where an employee was terminated and under absent the statutes under just the employment contract, the employer could have waited 7 months to pay that earned compensation. But the Supreme Court said, no, the statute requires payment of everything that's earned, everything that to which the employee has a vested right must be paid within 24 hours after involuntary termination. So again, that's another kind of desperate argument for Evosys to try to save this summary judgment decision, which was clearly wrong on the merits. The legislature made a policy decision that they wanted employers to pay terminated employees within 24 hours, not delay beyond that, not play games, not make those payments slowly over 6 months, some of them after the employee brings a conciliation court lawsuit, within 24 hours that there would be a penalty for failure to do so. That's what happened in this case. The penalty applies. The district court should be reversed. The legislature also made a specific policy decision that employees with age discrimination claims should be able to bring those claims directly to district court, unlike the federal statutes, which require exhaustion of administrative remedies. I believe the Minnesota Human Rights Act used to require administrative remedies before going to district court. That was changed. A party can bring an age discrimination claim directly to district court and obtain basic discovery on things like the age of his replacement.
Mr. Weiner, I have a question for you about the commissions. Can you tell me what disputed issues of material fact remain with regard to the data veil commissions?
The data veil commissions, the disputed issue would be whether Mr. Lasik or Mr. King was the procuring cause of the data veil sale. We cited in our brief deposition testimony from Mr. Lasik about that. Evosys, they rely on Mr. King's deposition testimony of why he believes he was the procuring cause. that creates a conflict between those the testimony of Mr. King and Mr. Lasik. That's for a jury to resolve at trial. It's not as though there's a specific clause in the contract that clearly applies and makes it so that Mr. King, rather than Mr. Lasik, is entitled to commission on that data veil account. It's basically a conflict between Mr. King's testimony that he was the procuring cause and Mr. Lasik's testimony that he was. I would also note that Mr. Lasik did ask for Mr. King's individual compensation plan in discovery, and he was denied that both by Evosys and by the district court in the motion to compel. So he did not even have access to Mr. King's individual commission plan for the purposes of evaluating whether under that plan Mr. King would have even had an arguable claim to the data veil commission. Also, finally, there's an issue of additional commission on the BOE accounts. The documents in the record for that are index number 118, which is exhibit C1A, C2A to Mr. Lasik's affidavit.
Mr. Weiner, it looks like the district court didn't address that claim regarding the BOE account. What are we to make of that in reviewing the case?
Yeah, I think the district court just missed the issue of the BOE. And again, that's another basis for reversal, is that he was underpaid on the BOE account. They calculated a certain amount of revenue for commission purposes, and then it was other documentation showed a different amount of revenue had actually been collected. So he was shorted on the BOE commission as well, which is an additional basis for reversal. I see my time is up.
Thank you. You'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Counsel for respondent, you can proceed when you're ready.
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honors, counsel, may it please the court. I'm John Strauss, and I represent the respondent, Evolutionary Systems. Reviewing the record before it and on the arguments made to it, the district court did not err in granting respondent Evolutionary Systems' motion for summary judgment. Rather, the evidence on summary judgment showed that Mr. Lasik received all payments he was owed by Evolutionary Systems and more on a timely basis. While Mr. Lasik makes new meritless arguments on appeal about unpaid salary, the district court properly rejected the arguments he made below, namely finding no disputed facts about the date of his termination. As to the commission—
Mr. Strauss, in my review of Mr. Lasik's brief memorandum before the district court, it did appear to me that he raised the timeliness issue under 181.13. So can you, and I'm looking at specifically with regard to the salary, he notes, he argues that it was 84 days, full payment was not until 84 days after the request. So was it proper for the district court to grant summary judgment on the 181 claim with regard to salary, given the facts showing that his first payment was not until August 15th and later payments after that date?
That's a completely different argument than what they're making on appeal, Your Honor. That's a completely different argument. That is basically, as Mr. Weiner stated, Mr. Lasik was paid his salary on August 15th. Here you're talking about something about 84 days later, that's vacation and other issues that he was saying he should have been reimbursed for. So it's not—
Well, either way, it's an argument that he wasn't paid within 24 hours, correct?
Well, it's an argument that they're not talking about the same damages. They're talking about a completely different thing. Here they're talking about, commissions. He was talking about commissions and vacation and other things related to that. He admitted below that he was paid August 15th. So I do not think they at all raised below that. And I recognize that he was pro se, but I did not make this argument. He made the arguments that he really made about wages below, whether that Evolutionary Systems miscalculated his pay, specifically vacation pay, and that he worked an extra 3 days for which he was not paid. They've abandoned those arguments now. And now they're making this argument about 5 days of pay, which is not at all what he was making below. It was about 84 days. But as this court knows, this is an error correcting court. and it should not review something that the trial court did not have the opportunity to get right and was not, did not consider below. So the
He does argue that he didn't receive his full salary until 84 days after his request, and argues that he's entitled to the 15-day salary payment as allowed under 181.13.
Well, they've completely waived that on appeal, Your Honor. The only thing they're arguing is about 5 days, not this issue of all these other things. He's talking about vacation, commission, and below he was talking about vacation, commissions, and other things. He was not talking about these 5 days of pay that Mr. Weiner was talking about today. So these are apples and oranges that we're talking about. And so it's a completely different thing. But nonetheless, it doesn't fail just because it doesn't comport with Minnesota procedure about new arguments. But it would have failed if it was heard below on just this 5 day argument. As Mr. Weiner said, Mr. Lasik was terminated effective August 7th. Demanded payment on August 9th, and was paid at the very latest on August 15th for these 7 days of work. So, although it wasn't obligated to, Evolutionary Systems continued to pay commissions to him after the termination date, even though, like I said, it wasn't obligated to do that. Minnesota case law stands for the proposition that wages that an employee has actually earned are defined by the employment contract, it cannot be determined through a claim brought under section 181.13. Pursuant to the employment contract here, the salary was payable on a monthly basis, subject to the timesheets being submitted and being approved by HR. So that's on page 2 of his employment contract, which is exhibit 1 to the Aurora Declaration. So, and they're paid at the end of the month. So the case law cited by the appellant and raised by Mr. Weiner today regarding wages is not on point. The Haruska case, which appellant relies on heavily, in that case, it was after the sale of the business where the defendant assumed the employment contract of the plaintiff and the employer failed to make the quarterly severance payment due after his June 1982 termination. And the payment wasn't made until February 1983. The court determined that the first severance payment was earned and unpaid in the quarter after Haruska's termination, not almost 7 months to a year later. Here, Mr. Lasik's 7 days of August salary was earned at the end of August when timesheets were reviewed by HR pursuant to his employment contract. The Caldas case that he also cites, the court held the wages were not earned in that case. In the Lee case, the Minnesota Supreme Court held that the employee's right to payment was subject to conditions precedent of making a timely request and receiving authorization from her supervisor. Similarly, Mr. Lasik's wages were payable monthly, subject to timesheets being submitted and approved by HR. So appellant makes no argument.
Mr. Strauss, I just want to talk about the October 31st payment. It's my understanding that Mr. Lasik is alleging that a payment made on October 31st included wages. And I think this is the 84 days payment. Are you saying that that payment is something that was waived by Mr. Lasik because it wasn't raised below? I don't think I understand your argument with regard to the wages paid on that.
I don't believe that there's any evidence that included wages. I think that was related to commissions, Your Honor.
Okay, so you're saying that the undisputed facts are that the October 31st payment was commissions only.
That's my belief. I don't have it right in front of me, Your Honor, but that is my belief that it was a commission only payment. It's possible it has to do with vacation pay, which I mean, and again, I don't have it in front of me, I apologize.
Okay, and perhaps that's something Mr. Weiner can address on the bottom.
For benefits, and they may have been for benefits, Your Honor, but benefits are not what they're talking about. They're talking about salary. He's talking, the argument that they made on appeal is about the salary for beginning of August. And that was all paid by August 15th. They have not appealed anything else regarding that. So I believe that the court was correct below
So in addition to it not being argued below, Mr. Lasek would lose on the merits on his new wage argument because the money had not been earned as of August 9, 2018. The vast bulk of litigation below was really about the timing of the commission payments. While he tries to change the tack before this court, at the court below, almost all of Mr. Lasek's case was based on his misunderstanding of Minnesota law. He believed that as long as he obtained a signed contract, he was entitled to his commission, even if Evolutionary Systems had not been paid. And as the court knows, under Minnesota law, commissions and wages only actually earned and paid at the time are due under 181.13, and the employment contract determines what's earned. On appeal, that argument is pertinent only to the BOE Group Commission. Mr. Lasek did obtain a signed contract from BOE Group, but Evolutionary Systems had not been paid by BOE Group for the amounts that he claims he was owed at the time of his termination.
Mr. Strauss, speaking of BOE, am I correct that the district court didn't address the BOE commission claim in granting the summary judgment motion?
Mr. Lasek raised a number of commission claims below. Most of his focus was on Actuant phase two and Datavail. He raised a bunch like BOE and a few others that I can't think of off the top of my head. And I don't think the court addressed those specifically except to say that there was no evidence. And he's right, the court below was right because there was no evidence of it. If you look at what Mr. Weiner pointed out, to the extent that the exhibit C1A is at all legible, it does not show anywhere that Evolutionary Systems obtained the revenue from BOE Group, the three projects listed in that chart. Plaintiff never explains what these charts were below. He never who created them, when they were dated, and what they mean. And the district court cannot be expected to conjure their meaning or accept counsel's unfounded explanation of them. There are no fact issues with the BOE Group account, whether or not the district court specifically addressed it. Now, unlike the BOE Group account, with Datavail, Mr. Lasek did not meet the first condition precedent. The Datavail account. He did not obtain the signed contract and purchase order. Counsel tries to say there was conflicting testimony in this, but the key here is the contemporaneous email from Mr. Lasek dated February 19th, 2019, where he stated that Mr. King said he was running lead on this until further notice. So we have a contemporaneous email from Mr. Lasek saying that this was not his account. Similarly, with Actuant Phase 2, Mr. Lasek did not obtain the signed contract. Actuant Phase 2 closed a year and a half after Phase 1. Mr. Lasek had obtained the contract for Phase 1, but the company policy was that revenue associated with an existing contract for work follows the delivery team, and Mr. Lasek was not part of the delivery team for Phase 2. At his deposition—
Is that spelled out clearly in the employment contract?
It's not an employment contract, it's in a company policy that was sent to employees, and that's Exhibit 12 to the Aurora Declaration. And it doesn't say otherwise in the employment contract. At his deposition, Mr. Lasek could not cite to any details of the Actuant Phase 2 account. He didn't know anything about it. And as the district court put it, Mr. Lasek's lack of effort in procuring Phase 2 of the Actuant contract is demonstrated by his contemporaneous email there, indicating he did not even know the contract had been signed, where he wrote, "I was not aware of this win, so I was caught off guard with the Oracle rep and the details." Mr. Lasek has no evidentiary support for his assertion that he's entitled to commission for actual phase two, and his assertion is contrary to company policy and belied by his lack of knowledge on the deal. In addition, for all these reasons, and it's a reason for the BOE one as well, under the contract, Evolutionary Systems had no further liability to Mr. Lasek after his termination. Nonetheless, in an effort to try to resolve this and avoid anything like litigation, Evolutionary Systems notified Mr. Lasek at his termination that it would pay him for commissions that it entered into the system by July, that he'd entered into the system by July 31st. And the evidence, as we explained in our brief, is that it did so. I'd like to briefly address the argument about age discrimination. Appellant now argues that the court should reverse the court below's discovery order regarding denying further discovery on his age discrimination claims. But critically, this is not what they appealed. Appellant's statement of issues states that makes clear that the order issue is the denial of the motion to amend, not a discovery order. And in the relief that's sought by the appellant in its appellant's brief to this court at page 26, asked this court to reverse the district court and remand with instructions to allow Mr. Lasik to amend his complaint to assert a claim for age discrimination. And that failure to appeal was not an innocent mistake by a pro se party. It was an error by a representative appellant. And this is a problem for Mr. Lasik, as he does not know the age of his replacement, or even if he was replaced, as he admitted on summary judgment and on appeal. By only speculating that he was replaced by a non-member of the protected class to do the same work, he does not have factual support to make a legally cognizable prima facie case for age discrimination under McDonnell Douglas and Ward. Appellant's argument on reply that case law supports his ability to plead a claim on the unfounded hope that discovery will reveal relevant evidence is odd. The cases he cites are two U.S. Supreme Court cases, and they're security cases where the court criticized largely groundless claims to take up the time of a number of people, along with abusive practices, including filing of lawsuits with only a faint hope that discovery might lead eventually to some plausible course of action or cause of action, and describing such actions as social costs rather than a benefit. These are the Dura Pharmaceuticals and blue chip stamp cases. I see that I'm running out of time. So I would say that in summary, the trial court worked its way through appellant's muddled pleadings, heard the claims on the merits, and recognized that there were no disputed facts precluding summary judgment. And we ask that this court affirm. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Strauss. Any rebuttal, Mr. Wiener?
Yes, Your Honor. There was a question during respondent's argument about the October 31st payment, and Mr. Strauss stated that that payment was only for commissions and no salary or other forms of compensation. That is not accurate. That's a misstatement of the record. If you look at the Aurora Declaration, which is index number 103, and Exhibit 5 to that declaration, the first page of Exhibit 5 to that declaration is the pay stub from the October 31st payment. It says there's $1,840 in commissions, but $3,915 is denominated as a salary payment, and $200 is denominated as an expense reimbursement. So again, the Evosys is mischaracterizing what is in the record there. And then keep in mind, October 31st was after Mr. Lasik had filed his conciliation court claim seeking to get paid what he was owed. He had to fight tooth and claw with Evosys to try to get everything he was owed here. He tried to do it pro se, and he did the best he could, and the district court erroneously dismissed his claim, so he retained my office to appeal that erroneous decision. Evosys also claims that Exhibit C to Mr. Lasik's affidavits is that it's impossible to decipher how much revenue Evosys collected from BOE from that document. Again, that's not true. There's, if you look at that document, which is an Evosys document, it's base labeled Evosys 213. So this is Evosys's document. There's a collection amount and an actual collection date column. So all you have to do is look at the actual collection date, the collection amount, there's totals. You can add those totals up to see how much revenue had been collected on BOE at any given time. And then if you compare that with Exhibit C1B of Mr. Lasik's declaration, you'll see that there's a discrepancy between how much they paid him, how much they calculated for the purposes of his commission on that account versus how much they actually collected and that he was shorted. So this was an erroneous grant of summary judgment. Evosys raises some issues on appeal saying, well, they didn't really have to pay him any of these things that they owed him. That's clearly they owed him something at the time of his termination. we're not just saying that the payments were 5 days late, only the first payment was 5 days late, but yes, the first payment was 5 days late. He continued to, the payments continued to come in on August 31st, October 10th, October 31st, November 30th, December 31st, January 31st, and he still hasn't been paid everything on the BOE account. He still has not been paid anything on Actuant Phase 2 and on DataVail, which is, there's a factual dispute as to who was the procuring cause here. Ambiguities in the employment contract are construed against the employer Evosys that drafted this employment agreement. To the extent that there's any ambiguity about whether or not Mr. Lasek is entitled to commissions under a particular set of fact circumstances, that issue would be resolved in Mr. Lasek's favor, not that of Evosys. There's fact disputes. There's fact, the discrepancies between what Mr. Lasek said happened and what Mr. King said happened is a fact issue that needs to be resolved at trial. Evosys points to certain emails by Mr. Lasek that they contend supports their position. They contend that Mr. Lasek's lack of detail on Actuant Phase 2 supports their position, but Diewalker Polisetti, who did receive the commission on that account, gave even less detail during his deposition about the work that he did to earn that commission. So these are fact issues warranting a trial. The 181.13 claim, I think Mr. Lasek is clearly wins as a matter of law on that one. The district court would still have to calculate the amount of the penalty on remand, but I think really, if anything, Mr. Lasek would have been entitled to summary judgment on the 181.13 claim if he had moved for summary judgment on that claim. I think there could be a basis for this court to instruct entry of summary judgment in his favor on liability on that claim. But the district court made an error. This court is, as counsel said, an error correcting court for correcting errors like this. There was an error here that needs to be corrected. And so I would ask that the court reverse the district court and remand. Thank you. And I see that my time is up.
Thank you to both counsel for your arguments. We will take the matter under advisement and issue our decision within the statutory timeframe.
Thank you, Your Honor.